o'clock. Right now it is time for Real News with Brian Ross. Brian joins us just about every Thursday morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning on generator power here.
You know, you get used to the sound in the background, but still, when the power comes back on, there's nothing like the peace and quiet that comes with it.
I can't wait, I tell you. But I guess we're still days away, huh?
Well, it's funny looking at the figures this morning. There were some towns that went down, Falls Village went down about 10%, and Salisbury actually went up, and Sharon went down because I think they fixed power and stuff to the hospital,
right?
So I think that's what. But a lot of towns are still at 99% without power. So we'll have to see. Beginning today, really, I always like to give the power companies a day or two to assess the situation. But beginning today is we'll see how well Eversource does in getting everything hooked back up. But
you know, it's interesting. There's a kind of bliss that comes from not being completely attached to the internet and everything that's happening on Twitter. 24/7.
There is, and you know what? You're old enough, I'm old enough to appreciate this. There's a lot of young people in broadcasting that when the power goes out and the internet goes out, they're stuck. They don't know what to do. Well, I started back in my radio career back in 1969, and you know what? I can dig up news in a million different ways.
right. Well, I have a few years on you, but exactly right. It's and you've been doing a great job. I've heard so many great comments about your reporting, keeping the entire community on top of what's going on.
All right. Well, a lot going on, not only here with our tornadoes and our tropical storms, but once again, as someone who's been involved in news for as long as you have, you must tilt your head to the side and just shake your head every once in a while at what we see unfolding us on the national and international level. The latest thing is the President of the United States saying that he's going to give his acceptance speech from the White House.
Exactly. I don't know how that's possible. I thought the White House was off limits for clearly, starkly political purposes.
Well, he obviously has everybody under his control, so I guess he can do what he wants with the Justice Department. But it's just one of those things that, yeah, I can understand if he wants to do it at his hotel in Washington, fine. I could care less about that. But to give an acceptance speech from the White House just would mark another new low in our politics.
Right. How many lows are left, including mispronouncing a certain national park? Oh my goodness,
Yosemite! I mean, it's for gosh sakes. Even if you watch cartoons, you know Yosemite Sam. I mean,
you just wonder: is it he's never seen those letters meant that pronunciation? It's just inconceivable to people I've talked to about, does he not go through the teleprompter at all before he speaks? Apparently not. He wings it, and that's what you get. And I think in a way that is the most telling of all. There's a certain kind of ignoramus quality about this. It's just embarrassing, frankly.
And don't you like to go back to the days of Tip O'Neill, when Tip O'Neill was going head to head with Ronald Reagan? Both just totally different, but they managed to get legislation passed. And the Senate and the House right now are so separated, they can't even come together on what to do with unemployment to help states with unemployment, and also the huge fortune that states are going to be spending on their school systems opening up for the new. There's just no federal help out there from the President to the House to the Senate.
I think for most of our listeners here in the Breakfast Club and around the country, really, it's the sad, tragic state of what's happening with the schools that is of most concern. Are we really prepared to lose a year of education for our children? That would be a terrible thing.
You know, it is, and everybody. I'll be honest with you, kids and students want to go back to school. They want to go back to grammar school. They want to go back to high school. They want to go back to college. Parents want them to go back to school. But everybody knows that this is a situation that we're learning more about every day, and you would just think that the federal government would somehow kick in with some money to help these school districts, because the expenses that are going to come at the tax bill, like here at Region 1, you're going to need bus monitors, you're going to need people to, there's so many other expenses that are going to be added to the education budget that go into just trying to provide safety. I just don't know where that money's going to come from.
Well, the government can always print it. They can borrow it, essentially, at pretty low rates, and it would be an investment in the future. Just, I don't think, as a country, we can afford to take a year off from our schools for our kids. That's just not really acceptable. There's got to be found a way. But as you say, the lack of leadership in Washington on both sides, in Congress and the White House, can't get along on anything here. They can't agree on what's going to happen. I see that Speaker Pelosi and the minority leader Schumer news conference today, and more negotiations continuing. And I think for most people, it's like, that's Washington for you. I mean, they throw up their hands and just despair, frankly, like this. They can't do anything. And that doesn't help President Trump in his efforts to be reelected, because where is the leadership? And, you know, for those who are able to read the New York Times this morning, that is one of two reasons that they cite for the failure of the U.S. in dealing with the COVID-19. One, a kind of rugged individualism that exists in the U.S., kind of in our American DNA. But two, a failure of the Trump administration to lead.
And sooner or later, the failure to have leadership on a national level does turn distinctly negative for the incumbent that is in office. One of the things used to be when you were leading up to the conventions, the naming of a vice presidential candidate had everybody on the edge of their seat. Well, I know Joe Biden is going to name, is supposedly coming up sometime this week or the end of this week or next week. But I just don't see people sitting on the edge of their seats when you have tropical storms and when you have COVID-19. It's a whole different look at, and the networks are not going to make a ton of money this year on the conventions.
Oh, not at all. And actually, they always lose money on the conventions, but they felt that it was their duty, and it probably is, to carry the two major parties nominating conventions. I've been at conventions almost every single one since 1968 in Chicago. And, you know, they are, you know, they're a throwback to the past. I mean, you wonder, do we ever need them? I used to go to these conventions and wonder, what's this all about, giving hours of network time to speeches that, you know, they tried to boil it down. And finally, you know, it's the nominating, the acceptance speech is generally seen by most political strategists as the way they launch the campaign. So that's important, and we need to hear those from both parties. But the whole process leading up to it really is, you know, it was, you don't have Mayor Daley giving the finger to Abraham Ribicoff or all those great moments we've seen in the past. They've become pretty boring, I would say. Marshall, I think the one thing that Mr. Trump has to worry about, in addition to what's going to happen with COVID-19, is the investigation by the district attorney in Manhattan. That really seems to be serious and substantial based on new court filings this week.
Yeah, when Cyrus Vance basically said, hey, listen, we're not rehashing old topics. We're not just investigating payoffs to porn stars. There's a whole other angle to this investigation. I know that was big news, and that news had to also shake to the bottom the White House and the administration.
Absolutely. And now that Deutsche Bank, which has loaned Trump billions of dollars over the years, apparently has complied with subpoenas going back late last year for information and very detailed information about the Trump Organization. It wouldn't be just Donald Trump. It'd be executives in the company and his children, to the extent that they sign documents. Bank fraud can be a very precise thing and very easy to prove to a jury. Either it is or it isn't correct. If you signed off on something that wasn't correct, all they have to prove is that you had knowledge that you were signing a false document. That's a serious crime. That's why Paul Manafort was sentenced to 7 years in jail.
It's going to be interesting to see if and when the election comes and goes, and we might have a new president or not, but what happens with those investigations, because you're right, those obviously are far-reaching, almost like years gone by, the underworld investigations.
Absolutely. It's piercing this large company, the Trump Organization, which over the years has been in and out of all kinds of precarious financial situations. And with Michael Cohen, his former lawyer, who we presume has an inside knowledge, saying that Trump regularly inflated the value of his holdings for both insurance and bank loan purposes. If those documents were fraudulently submitted, that is fraud, and that's garden variety criminal case, and that's what the Cyrus Vance documents suggest at this point. And that's something Donald Trump has to worry about.
Well, we obviously are going to be into an extended, incredible news cycle, but I would be remiss if I didn't remind Americans about what happened in Lebanon the other day with the storage of ammonium nitrate in the middle of an immensely populated city, and those are why we have some protections that we have in this country. When people talk about the environmental protections we have, those environmental protections are there to prevent something exactly like you just saw happen in Beirut.
Oh, just an astounding thing. And a good friend of our family is the New York Times reporter there, Vivian Yee, who wrote a compelling story yesterday about she, in fact, suffered injuries in the blast in her own apartment. She was lucky to have survived. You know, 150 or more dead, and just hundreds of thousands of homes wiped out. What a disaster. Beirut's always been a difficult place. You know, they led long, protracted civil war that took so many lives and divided the city, and now they're back in the middle of a real chaos.
Absolutely amazing. Well, lots of news to look at and talk about. Brian, we'll speak to you again next week.
Okay, great talking to you, Marshall.
Take care. Brian Ross on Robin Hood Radio with Real News. And, of course, you can find him on the web, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand Real News with Brian Ross, and also with his own investigative reports.